hope someday I'll make it out of there, even if it takes all night or a hundred years. Need a place to hide. 终有一天 A place to hide. Can't find one here. Written by 一切 Read by SBL. Fandom The Untamed. Relationship 蓝詹蓝文吉魏颖魏无羡 Rating Explicit. Additional tags to consider. Mental health issues. Suicide attempt. Suicidal thoughts. Depression. Hospitals. Overdosing.Additional content warnings for Chapter 1. Graphic on-screen suicide attempt via drug overdose. Graphic aftermath of said suicide attempt. Blood. Mentions of vomiting. Head injuries in flashback. Implied cancer in flashback. Parental death in flashback. Hospitals. Depression and anxiety. Frank discussions of death. Medication. Dysfunctional family dynamics. Narcissistic mothers.Mental health stigmas. Please proceed with caution. Chapter 1. I hope someday. The first time Wei-Ying tipped backwards out of an office chair, the kind that spun with five-pronged starfish feet tipped in wheels, he hit his head on a bookcase and needed 7 stitches to close the gash in his scalp. He was 5.If he looks hard enough, on the back of his head, where his hair is thickest and darkest, he can still find the scar, faint and stiff as an old rubber band. Hair never relearned how to grow over the scar tissue. He can't find it unless he's looking, and he doesn't, usually. Sometimes, when he shampoos, he will, and he loses himself in the hot water for 10 minutes, running his fingers over the naked line of skin.Unable to ignore it with the same inexplicable, sticky urge to pick scabs before they've healed just to see the raw pink skin beneath. Most of that night is a blur now. The rattling gasp that had come out of his own throat when his head glanced off the edge of the bookshelf. The thud of his little body, the dull throb of pain, the trickle of blood running in rivulets down his neck. Ajie's quiet voice floated down the hallway,like the candy, soft smell of Nian Gao and Zhou Niang calling. Aying? Aying, was that you? Until she found him and her voice jackknifed into a torn, horrified scream. Aying! Yu Aiyi had been disappointed. Not because of the mess or even the trouble of taking him to the emergency room. You could have saved us the trouble and just not woken from it. She'd sighed.With the same distaste one would peel gum or bits of crushed snail off the sole of her shoe. Her car had smelled like blackberry hand soap. Wing hates blackberries. He'd seen Jiang Shushu do it all the time without so much as wobbling. Most nights he'd be up late on conference calls, long, long after Wing and Jiang Tang and Jiang Yanli were supposed to be in bed. Sleep never came to Wing like it did for Jiang Tang,for as long as he's remembered. In the beginning, he always worried that his parents would appear again in the night, and he wouldn't be there to greet them and hug them and say, "Finally, Baba, Mama, you've come back for me!" The lamplight always streamed in soft, thick streaks through the crack between the floor and the door, goldening the hallway nearly to the kitchen. On some nights, the door would be ajar, Jiang Shushu bringing a cloud of his cigarette smell in from the balcony.Midway through a smoke when his boss needed him back on the phone. And Wayne wasn't supposed to be awake, but he'd get up for water, for the bathroom, and see Jiang Shushu with his feet up on his desk, the corded phone pressed to his ear, plum purple from exhaustion, chair tipped back. Sometimes he'd be holding a ream of hospital white paper filled with a march of numbers. He finds it now, strangely.Without even looking that hard, This car and all its memories, a little white sailboat against the black water. Rubs his thumb over it. His hair screeches as he does. The floor of the bathtub is halfway to damp and sticky with shower gel residue, seeping through the backs of his pants, and a long, coarse hair too thick to belong to Ajie, Tiantong's probably, is plastered like a graffiti mark to the side of the tub. He puts his socked toe to it, and it flutters onto the textured, no-sleep bath mat. A black strand of hair against aged, fleshy pink rubber. The moment between the tip and the impact, though, that heady, breathless in-between that straddled the anatomic dead space where he knew there was no other way this could end. It's the only part of the night he remembers with punishing clarity. It had only lasted for a split second, less even, but it stands out like a metal spike in the oily asphalt of that night. Wayne doesn't know how he got into this bathtub. He knows, but he doesn't. The day had moved around him like cold, flavorless thyme porridge, parting sluggishly where he went. Where there should have been the darting of thoughts, his head felt like a big, black hole. He was scared to touch his own face for fear of his hand falling through. Nothing there. Nothing there but yawning, black endlessness. That's what they got wrong, the pamphlets and posters. Always orange and teal panels, sometimes purple, almost garish and Halloween-y. It's not that he's ever thought about it, planned it like he plans out his schedule to make sure he doesn't miss work, because no alarm seems to wake him up lately.
I think I'll die today.
Once or twice as a student, he'd visited the health department on campus and left with a business card cheery and crisp as a spring leaf, jumping from his palm like a slice of grapefruit. "Speak up if you're feeling down," it told him. "Did you know, after car accidents, the leading cause of death in adults aged 18 to 34 is..." No one sits down in their spinny chair and tips backwards out of it because they want to. Wayne didn't, and he still doesn't. But once it does, you can't stop. Your head is going to hit the bookcase, and it will bleed. And if you're lucky, someone will find you.
"If you want to die, then do it right. That's what you wanted, didn't you?"
Blackberries, traffic smoke, head full of noise.
"Ungrateful money sock. Ali, don't let him bleed on the seats."
It isn't. It's a funny difference. He doesn't want to die. It's just that he doesn't want to live. The sun flares through the tempered glass windows and glancing flashes off the edges of the bathroom mirror, the medicine cabinet, settles in neat orange squares on the back of the door. Wei watches it slide down the wood, turning it mahogany. A door shuts quietly outside.
"Hi Ying, I'm going out now,"
says Jiang Yanli, and the frosted glass paneling turns the outline of her into a soft, grainy smear of pastry icing on the other side of the door. She has a date with Jin Sushuan tonight.
"I left sliced pork with garlic sauce in the fridge for you.
Ah Chang said he was going to eat with Xiao Sang tonight."
"Thanks, Ajie," he says. "You coming home tonight?"
"Ah Ying!"
"Kidding, I'm kidding."
His laughter rings in the tiny bathroom.
"Make him order you the nice stuff, or I'll be having words with him."
"Stop it."
"Okay, okay, stopping, I promise."
"Then I'll leave now."
"Jie."
"What?"
"Go safely."
"Hiya, I know."
She sings songs. Then, after a smart click of heels, the front door closes. Wayne sits back again. Balanced on the rim of the tub are his dates for the evening, a motley row of bottles and containers, three of them gathered in their own little support group.
You're here to help him sleep too?
He stares up at the pole holding the shower curtain in place, at the hangers that dangle from it. One of them is overbalanced to one side, the kind with 24 clips gathered on a circular frame, with the weight of what must be every single sock that Jiang Yanli owns. And then he's a black hole again. When he was 5, woozily trying to remember how to walk after his stitches, he figured that dying was a loud, sad thing, that he'd be scared of it. Not sitting in a tub with his plastic tumbler in the cradle of his crossed legs, unboxing a fresh blister pack of pills, red and yellow. They blink up at him like miniature traffic lights. Don't go. Stop.
Don't run. If he dies in this car, then it's my problem, Ali. How do you think it looks to drive a dead kid around, huh?
His phone bleats at him.
Dongtong. Hey, Jia said you're staying in. Do you want food? If you don't answer in 5, gonna take that as a no.
Wing pauses, his aluminum blister popping.
Wing. Nope, I'm good. Jia left pork slices. Jiangtong. You sure? Don't complain if you're hungry later. We're close to that place with that stinky tofu you like. The one that I said smelled like socks.
He follows this up with an animated sticker of a baby's head crying at a cartoon dollop of poop.
Wing. I'm sure, decided Kalmoji. Probably I will just make some ramen if I get hungry. Jiangtong. Okay. How is it that Jay and I have shit to do tonight and you don't, huh? Your lunch I go busy or something?
Wing's thumbs pause. It's almost evening. Lanchen is probably already done with dinner and practicing piano. He owned one that he could connect his earphones to, so he could play in total silence and not disturb the neighbors. It was self-playing, too. One of the fancy Yamaha pianos. Given to him from his brotherhood, like most oldest children, retired from piano for a more lucrative, family-approved pursuit in business. Whenever Wei Ying visits, Lanchen would load his favorite song and let him watch the keys play themselves. It's romantic, said Wei Ying once. Like watching a ghost play their heart song for me. Lanchen had smiled without even moving his mouth, that tiny, soft lip appearing beneath both his eyes, along his dark lower lash line, before he turned away. His phone dims now, sleepy, and he touches his screen. Jiangtong's message taps its foot in anticipation at him.
Wing. Don't know.
Oh, he hasn't sent a sticker in too long. There. A cat with a snot bubble should do it. Jiangtong starts typing again, but Wing simply slips his phone and puts it face down on the rim of the tub. Goes back to emptying his prescription into his tumbler. Conk, conk. The clatter of capsule skin to old plastic grounds him. Then he's out. 3 months' worth of Estazolam, 3 boxes of 3 blister packs each. 90 should be enough. He holds the cup still between his thighs and unscrews the fresh bottle of baijiu, listening to the merry glug of liquor as it pours. The bottle is pretty, with a graceful swan's neck and a label with gold foil on it. A dinner party centerpiece, one to be passed around and admired and recommended to tipsy, pink-cheeked friends, where there is too much laughter in the kitchen, the TV is playing some bad, low-budget war drama that no one's watching. Stop cooking and come eat! And the sound of a stuffed hood powering down after sucking away all the shrimp smell and clam sauce stickiness. A wine for that kind of night. Not this. Silent and overseen by a jury of socks. He sloshes a bit of baijiu when he lifts his cup and stares down into his cocktail. The alcohol is so strong, it smells as if its only legal use is to strip paint off an old car, and already the pills have begun to erode and bloom, color bleeding into the liquor. Trails of red and wasp yellow crane for the surface. Tea for the end of things. He probably won't taste as good. It doesn't. Wei usually drinks huangjiu, mainly because he likes the sweet, but baijiu turns his throat as it goes down. The steeping of pills has warped the flavor, but they rush towards his mouth, tumble past his teeth, and he opens wider so they run down his throat. He drinks them in. It's not so unlike hitting the bottom of a bag of green onion chips and holding the crinkling plastic to his lips to shake the crumbs into his mouth. Dribbles of baijiu run down the corners of his mouth in rivulets. He grimaces when his cup empties. The pails have stained the bottom, orange ooze dirty and paled with floating bits of old toothpaste. He sets his cup down and unscrews the bottle of anti-emetic syrup that Zhang Tang had bought for Ajie when she had a stomach bug. There is more than half left. He takes a swig. It tastes like strawberry chalk and raw flour. Above him, the tiny bathroom window is still propped open, and Wing stares at the spidery network of dead mosquitoes that had gotten stuck in the insect screens. He doesn't feel anything. In his belly, his stomach gurgles, a drooling, leechy creature with buzzing light bulbs for eyes. That's just the thing, isn't it? Wayne feels nothing. He doesn't feel anything. This emptiness should scare him. He knows he should be scared. He wants to be scared. He isn't. Fear itself is never scary. Fear is just a response. It means that your body wants you alive. It's the absence of terror that scares him. Well, nothing's happening, so he drinks another mouthful of the syrup that tastes like liquefied sidewalk and grout, stands up, and starts washing his cup. There's a round pink scrubby that Ajie keeps in the bathroom that she makes them use whenever they leave toothpaste residue in the sink. Wayne pours some hand soap into his cup and scrubs. The water runs. His reflection stares back at him. Behind him, the washer and dryer gawk at him. One of them does, anyway. The washer door hangs open, slack-jawed, with a sweat of condensation beating its face. Wayne shivers, the alcohol buzzing low in his belly. It's cold. It's almost summer, so it shouldn't be, especially not in the muggy bathroom. But he shivers and shuts off the water. Does he leave the cup in the sink? Someone will have to clean it up later. He nearly slips, sitting back down on the edge of the bathtub. His feet fall in a slimy puddle left over from someone's shower this morning. Might have been his own, he can't remember, but the sensation makes him colder. He leans down and peels his socks off, thin, veiny membranes coming away from his skin. But the world tilts, and Wayne has to take the other sock off in the bathtub. His chest is hot and sour all at once. Bright green phosphine splashes across his ribs. The sock finally comes off. His hand is right by the shower knob, and he's cold. He's so fucking cold. Everything is cold. His hands shake. They're shaking all the way up to his shoulders. In all the stories he's heard, no one had ever told him that his fingertips would go before his vision did. Because watching his own hand turn the hot water feels disconnected from his own body. Water spurts explosively from the lower nozzle, then the shower head, as it always does, pipes clunking like ghosts in the walls. Oh, Wayne's head is heavy, like the sky had caved around it. When he presses his cheek to the rim of the tub, the porcelain is cold too. The ceiling hangs so low. It's drooped. He can reach up and touch it, but his stomach churns and he thinks he better not move or everything will come back up. His phone chimes. He left it on the rim of the tub. He wonders who's calling. They'll have to leave a voicemail. The apartment is dark when Jiang Cheng gets home, which is a little disappointing. He's so fucking good at Super Smash when he's on the edge of drunk. On a bad day, Wing can beat him in a little less than 10 minutes. And on a good day, Jiang Cheng can hold out for 20. There should be some kind of law stating that no one who uses a character as annoying as Pikachu should be allowed to win Super Smash so easily. And yet. It's fine. He's come second all his life. He's gotten pretty good at it.
I'm home,
Jiang Cheng announces to the foyer at large, switching the lights on and immediately almost tripping over a pair of Jiang Yanli's strappy sandals. She never puts them back in the rack. No answer. Wing's probably in one of his moods, one of the downswings. Jiang Cheng will have to check if he remembered to eat. He brought home some of that stinky tofu anyway, because it was unlike Wei Ying to reply so dully to a text about Lan Chen, so he probably needed it. Mie Huiseng had wanted it too, so in a way, it had simply been convenient for him to grab some. The kitchen smells faintly of garlic, and the sweet, ashy scent of a mosquito coil burned down to its end. And the refrigerator unseals with a wet squelch that says summer is coming when Jiang Cheng opens it, looking for the leftover bottle of green tea he'd gotten from the hole-in-the-wall convenience store downstairs.
Nie Huiseng. Favorite thing about taking the subway home? Pole bar flirting tonight selection is someone with clam hands. Who was cute until that? Why is it that they're always cute until I see their hands? The crying emoji. You think being gay is hard? Try telling people you vet them based on how pretty their hands are.
Jiang Cheng tips his head back and drinks.
Jiang Cheng. LMFAO, barf. Nie Huiseng. How's that Xiaozi? He usually doesn't turn down stinky tofu. Hope he's feeling okay.
A snotty, crying old man sticker.
Jiang Cheng. Yeah, IDK. I think he's in his room. I'm gonna talk to him. Nie Huiseng. Tell him to keep his chin up. His not boyfriend has sexy hands. What's there to be sad about?
He opens the fridge again, light casting a jaundiced glow over the sticky kitchen tiles. And just as Jiang Cheng moves to close it, he sees the bowl full of garlic pork that Wei Ying had mentioned their sister left behind, under a wrinkled membrane of cling film. As he'd expected, untouched.
Hey, Wei Ying, even if you're not hungry, you should at least give Ajie some face,
he calls, pulling the meat and some leftover rice from the fridge.
You know how annoying this shit is to make. She spends ages chopping garlic. Also, I got you horrible stinky tofu you like. Xiaosang wanted to stop by the joint.
No answer.
Are you listening?
The soft sound of the shower running filters down the dark hallway when Jiang Cheng pokes his head out of the kitchen.
Hey, Wei Ying,
he calls.
Why didn't you eat?
But only the quiet hush of water drones on. When someone showers, the soft pop, pop, pop of soap sod and shampoo foam hitting the floor of the tub always punctuates the wide noise of running water. And Jiang Cheng hears none. Wei usually runs the bathroom fan when he showers too, and he doesn't hear it now.
Wei, he calls. Are you showering?
He flicks the hallway light on. Water seeps through the crack at the bottom of the door, pulling onto the hardwood in the hallway.
Jiang Cheng frowns.
What? Hey, Wei Ying! He shouts. There's water all over the hallway! What kind of shower are you taking? Are you fucking listening to me? You're flooding the hallway!
When there's still no answer, a ribbon of unease slips into Jiang Cheng's throat.
Wei Ying!
The water is soaking through his socks.
What the hell are you doing in there?
He tries the knob. It's locked. None of them ever lock the doors when they use the bathroom because it jams. Jiang Cheng jiggles it, and the metallic sound of steel on brushed steel grinds its teeth.
Wei Ying!
Cloudy tendrils and a slick, dark oil float along the surface of the water puddling around him. It doesn't look like soap suds, but he can't figure out what it could possibly... Jiang Cheng feels his body go cold.
Open up!
He shouts into the crack between the door and its frame.
Wei Ying, open the fuck up! What are you doing in there? If you don't open up, I'll kick the door in!
The light isn't even on. The frosted glass, a dim swamp green, fogging up from the steam without the bathroom fan on.
Wei-ying!
The kitchen is so far away. A dull buzz and a ringing roars in his ears. Zhang Tong pulls his sleeve, flees over knuckle, to cover his fist with shaking hands and, tucking his thumb hard over his knuckles, brings it into the glass. Pain explodes in light show from his knuckles and sprints in hard, barbed lines towards his shoulder. He barely registers.
Wei-ying!
His mouth is shouting, but his brain is a blank, slippery arm full of fear.
What is he doing? What did he do? What has he done?
The glass finally cracks. A hairline fracture. Zhang Teng swallows, knuckles stinging, and gathers more sleeve over his hand and connects his fist with it again. And it gives. His arm lurches through the hole, broken glass clawing at his sleeve, and Zhang Teng nearly faceplants into the door. The air inside is sticky and metallic, and he casts out wildly looking for the knob on the other side. His fingers slip on the lock. Steam has gathered in sweaty droplets upon it.
Oh, come on!
He shouts when it refuses to turn. Then he does, and he flicks on the light, and... Jiang Tong has seen a lot of horror movies growing up. Such is the fate of he who calls himself family of someone like Wei-ying. Before he turned 18, he'd already been traumatized within an inch of his life by all the Ju-on movies, the Japanese and the American versions, and half the Saw franchise, a bizarre short film about eating unborn fetuses, and some horrible ghost movie that Wei-ying could not stop laughing at but scared Jiang Tong so shitless anyway that he couldn't sleep for a week. So, he thinks he's seen it all. There's blood. There's vomit, and there's something else. Chalky white and pink. He doesn't know what it is. The whole bathroom is wreathed in the heavy, nauseating scent of orange blossom shampoo over the sour of bile. Zhang Tong thinks he's screaming, but he can't hear himself. His lips trying to cross the bathroom and has to dig his fingers into the counter. There's a cup in the sink. There's soap in the sink. Pill packets float past his ankles, like little aluminum canos. Wayne's head rests on the side of the tub, and water is spilling out from the lower edge of the rim. His phone is face down and wet, keeps lighting up and gurgling as its chips and plates drown in the lukewarm water. The lock screen is a picture of Wei-ying in that lantern, flickering like a dying sodium lamp. He shuts the water off first, almost yanks the knob out of the wall doing it, and in the light, bruises bloom in blue dimples on his knuckles. Some of them are bleeding. The sting of roughing against fleece dies at his wrist. His whole body is numb. The water around them heaves with the addition of another body, flooding over the rim with a warm splash as Zhang Cheng gathers Wei-ying in one arm to prop him upright. His mouth twists around words, and these he hears.
Wei-ying!
And,
oh my God! Oh my fucking God!
And,
wake up! Wake up! Wake up!
Wake up! Wayne's hair floats in fine, spidery lines in the water, feathering softly where it breaks the surface. Now that the water is off, the bathroom is too silent. Empty glass thunks hollow against porcelain, like the pound of his heartbeat against his sternum. Zhang Cheng tries to think of something, anything, hell, something he's seen from a movie, even. He prizes Wing's jaw open, and there's no evidence of what he swallowed, or how much of it is still in his body. Everything smells like sick and alcohol and strawberry. He's seen people stick their fingers down someone's throat to make them vomit again. He's too scared to do it. What if he forces something back down? Are you even supposed to do that? He doesn't fucking know.
Wei-ying!
He shakes him by the face. His head only lolls. Wake up. He needs help. He wants his sister. They're alone. He's holding his brother, but soon he'll just be a body. He wants someone to tell him what to do. Wei-ying is usually the one who tells him how to talk, how to act, how to feel when Jiang Cheng doesn't know which path to take. He has told Jiang Cheng to stop crying, and then he has wiped his blotchy face. Chang Chang pretended to hate it. The idea of losing that all is unfathomable.
Wake up!
The water has dampened his phone in his pocket. His heart is a kick drum. Chang Chang shakes so hard that he can barely hold his phone up to his face to unlock it. And when he does, he can't even remember what number he was for an ambulance. 119? 110? No, 120. And his voice doesn't sound like his own when it comes out of his mouth, exploding like he'd been holding a lit firework in his teeth.
120, what's your emergency?
Wake up. I don't know how to exist in a world where I only have a sister.
My brother's trying to kill himself!
Lan Huan is awake with a cup of tea when Lan Chen leaves his room past 10. The lights are off, but the TV is on, volume turned down low and a Scottish documentary about old castles. The glow from the screen turns his brother's face into a blue ghost in the night. The shadows turn his face into a light show of sharp angles.
You're still awake, he says, at Lan Chen's movement towards the kitchen. There's chrysanthemum tea if you need.
Thank you.
Is there something keeping you up?
Not exactly. Lan Chen had gotten into bed early because he had classes to teach in the morning on weekends, but he tossed restlessly for an hour without knowing why. Wayne hasn't replied to his texts when he checked. He usually does, though it often takes him longer to, curled up tight in bed like a newborn fawn hidden in grass, nose tucked into his blanket like a prey animal. Lan Chen had seen him fall asleep like that once on his couch, when he'd been playing Ludovico Einaudi, Nuvole Bianche. Wayne hadn't moved when Lan Chen stopped, and then hadn't moved when he draped his blanket over him.
Can't sleep,
Lan Chen says. His brother has left the kettle on the stovetop, the brushed steel glinting like a capsized chip in the dark.
I'm fine, but I have class in the morning.
Will it help to talk? Is Wayne still awake?
Most likely.
The teacup is warm in Lan Chen's palm, and the soft scent of chrysanthemum hovers over his lips as he drinks.
He can't talk right now?
Lan Huan guesses.
Perhaps not.
Lan Huan gestures to their Yamaha.
I can play then if it would help. No need, Ge. Are you sure? I am.
Lan Chen's phone lights up. He hadn't planned on bringing it out into the kitchen with himself, but he checked the time right before rising and hadn't put it down. A smile has already begun when he realizes that it's not a text notification. It's a call. No one calls him except for his brother or his uncle, and Wayne doesn't usually call first. It's Jiang Yanli. Lan Chen stares. He doesn't have a contact photo set for her, the frosted film of an incoming call blurring his lock screen. It's a picture of Wayne, hands outstretched with a black butterfly in his palms. With its wings spread, it had winking sunspots dipped in lipstick on its tails. They'd been at a botanical garden. For a few months, they'd rarely finished teaching at the same hour because of their students' piano exams, since Lan Chen taught at an advanced level and Wayne worked with teenagers upon whom he spent time and energy and love. He'd said,
"Teenagers are just people who need someone to believe in them."
Then met up outside the conservatory, and Wayne had been a bright streak of gold in the sunset. And without thinking, Lan Chen had invited him out for dinner. His chest had been a big, rainy, glowing thing that evening, like he'd swallowed a whole month's worth of spring. He answers.
Hello?
At first, there is silence, and Lan Chen is certain she must have called him on accident. Perhaps wiggle her phone where it had been sleeping in her pocket. Then.
Lan Chen?
Her voice is every kind of wrong. Jiang Yanli, he says, croaky, mouth forgetting how to form words. Is everything okay?
More silence. In his periphery, his brother sits up on the couch, and Lan Chen turns his back so he faces the granite countertops. Blood is humming in his throat like he swallowed a hummingbird. Then, through the static, she whimpers.
Lydia,
he says, the name that she insisted to call her whenever she saw him.
What's wrong?
The hum turns to sweat. The sweat chills. Lin Chen feels his knees sway like high rises when earthquakes shake the land, all his hinges loosening. The curtains shivering like a child hiding and smothering their giggles behind them. All at once, his insides are metallic, a whole moving box full of silvery and crockery shattering.
What happened?
Lin Chen would not describe himself as someone with an active imagination, but his thoughts explode nuclear and dusty on the insides of his skull. Words lose their meaning somewhere between his belly and his mouth.
Did something happen to him?
Yes.
Is he dead?
The couch whistles when his brother stands up behind him, and the creak of the floorboards is already a noise that belongs to a different reality. Lan Chen is in free fall.
No. I don't know.
Jiang Yanli says, and this is what breaks her, the uncertainty. She sobs and her words melt together. In that horrible way they do when someone is crying, but they're still holding themselves up against the flood. The hot, sour smell of tears pressing down on the throat. Lin Chen can't understand her anymore. Like trying to pick out separate petals in the slush of springtime rain, plum blossoms blending into a dark pink puree on the curbs and in the storm drains.
I don't know. Lin Chen, I don't know. It's not. It's hanging out, but I don't. We don't know if he'll wake up. We don't know how bad it is yet. He won't tell me or I'll tell anything, but it's been an hour since I got here.
Not dead. Somehow it doesn't sound like it's supposed to mean alive. He's not dead, says Jiang Yanli, as if that's all there is left to say.
What happened?
Weirdly, Lin Chen hopes she'll say it was an accident. A sick sort of comfort comes with accidents, because it's part of being alive, part of being in a world full of moving pieces. Sometimes things bump into each other. When she doesn't answer him right away, he knows. He just knows.
A tongue found him,
she says, which isn't an answer.
He found him in the bathroom. When he got back from dinner, he waited for us to leave. There were pills.
Saying he tried to kill himself is too ugly, because the words, and he might have succeeded, dangle like a stillborn behind it, gooey and limp and unsaid.
I'm too afraid to imagine if Ah Cheng had gone home later.
Jiang Yanli breathes again, the noise tickling the shell of Lan Chen's ear.
The doctors are still trying to stabilize him.
Lan Chen's head is rubble, shrapnel, bundles of open wire. The dust hasn't settled. All of him is acid and high voltage.
Where are you now?
Shanghai Changcheng Hospital. In Huangpu,
she says.
But Lan Chen, it's late. I just thought you should know. Ah Cheng told me that he asked about you before it happened. That I ain't sounded wrong when he answered, so I thought I would.
She takes a deep, evening breath, voice still watery, but steady at least.
Lan Chen, come visit him.
She sniffles, and suddenly, Lin Chen feels like he's on the phone with someone much younger than he is. A teenager. A child. A child who had walked in on the paint spatter of head blood. Skull blood. Dark and sticky as forgotten blackberries left in pockets and puddling in an oblong across hardwood.
I'll be on my way.
He hangs up, and he's untethered. The TV is on mute now, but still on, lights strobing the kitchen red. Lan Huan is behind him, a steadying hand on his arm. Like he knows Lan Chen might wilt if he isn't holding on to him.
What's wrong?
He asks.
is in the hospital.
Let's go, says Lan Huan, without another word. He doesn't even ask who. Lan Chen doesn't know what he looks like, but he's glad that his face is doing the talking.
Which one? Tang Tong.
Lan Chen says, and his vision swims. His brother has leapt into motion, opening the coat closet by the entrance and shrugging on a cardigan over his pajamas.
Good.
Some faint, frayed part of him is thankful that his brother is moving so quickly, because Lan Chen feels like all his bones have been replaced with mismatched wooden jigsaw pieces.
I'm calling a Didi. Let's go way downstairs.
Good.
Let's go, Chen. You'll feel better when you see him.
He doesn't. The entire car ride to Changcheng on the other side of the Huangpu River is unbearable. Lan Chen can't breathe and at the same time feels so full of air that he could vomit. He'd read somewhere once that if too much air got inside your veins, it'd travel its way around your body, wiggle into your brain, and kill you. He imagines it with a grotesque sort of detail, body rocking with the traffic. Cars sprinting down the highway on both sides with angry cat eyes for taillights, leering at them. His phone lights up every time his arm is jostled, the lock screen of Wing and his butterfly blinking slowly in and out of existence. Here, gone. Here, gone. Here, gone. Lan Chen unlocks his phone, thumbing over his WeChat app. Wing is pinned at the top, along with his brother, and all his other group chats cascade in a chattery mess beneath them both. Notifications off. Neat, unread buttons with messages numbering into the dozens glare up at him. His last conversation with Wing had been from this morning.
Wing, I got a double yolked egg today! Look, look! Image.
And a chicken sticker doing a happy little dance.
Lan Chen, congratulations. You'll be lucky today. You're up so early. You sent me a message at almost 4 a.m. Wing, I've got level 8 babies testing today. I want to stop by the conservatory and make sure they're feeling okay. Some of them aren't ready, but their parents have paid me to train them for level 8. You know how it goes, Lan Chen. Weary cow emoji. Lan Chen.
Yeah. If you don't have class until evening today, we can get dinner if you want. Last week you said there was a new restaurant on Nanjing Road that you wanted to try. But if you're tired, it can wait.
Wing. A little bit. Rain check? Lan Chen.
Of course. I only have one class in the morning if you want me to bring food.
And then Wing hadn't replied again. Later that evening, just before dinner.
Lan Chen.
I'm sure your double egg yolk was with your students all the way today. Get some sleep tonight. If you want to hear me play Nuvole Bianca, call me whenever. I can play whatever else you like too.
Get some sleep tonight. Lan Chen looks at his own message and the nausea steamrolls through him again. In the almost summer, the air has turned yellow and humid, like a breath after dinner, so he forces himself to breathe in deep. Gulps down mouthfuls of the sticky, orange-scented air-conditioning air, the smoky aftertaste of cigarettes lingering on the back of his tongue. He smelled it as soon as he fell into the Didi. The driver turning to them and asking if he was Lan Huan.
He clings to the upholstery.
Slower, Ai Tan. You'll make your head spin.
Good. If his head spins, at least it's some semblance of motion or sensation. Lan Chen can't feel anything. Like his body isn't flying down the expressway, pushing 120 on the dash. He closes his eyes and lets the world around him be tactile. He sent one text to Jiang Yanli.
Please let me know if anything changes.
Please let him know if he's going to be too late. Lin Chen has not liked the hospital since he was six and had to watch his mother die in one, as all the machines around her, like a million cicadas, fell quiet at once. Back then, he couldn't even see over the receptionist's desk in the Department of Oncology. His father, and then his uncle, had to hold him up over the counter so he could get his visitor's sticker. Once, one of the nicer ones had put it on his hand and told him to stay strong for his mama. He didn't cry that day. The receptionist at this hour is not bound to be particularly nice. Her hair is wiry with gray, and she peers over her bifocals and a beaky nose as Lan Chen approaches with his brother. Visiting? Lan Chen nods mutely. Name and relationship to patient?
Lan Chen, I'm Wing's friend.
She squints at her monitor, a fine layer of dust collecting on the top rim, as she looks him up in the directory.
Non-family visitation hours are closed. But I see.
She leans in, chain of her glasses swinging and catching the weak fluorescence.
That you're an emergency contact. Write your name and sign here. You?
She barks at his brother.
I'll wait here,
says Lan Huan, ever pleasant. He goes through the motions of medical bureaucracy, showing his ID, signing, getting his visitor's pass printed. He pastes it to the soft front of his cardigan, suddenly aware of how underdressed he is. Like his brother, he's just wearing a knit over his pajamas, hair down without even a pin to hold it back.
I'll be right here.
Lan Huan sits down and makes a show of looking comfortable in a slotted metal chair.
No rush, A-chan. Call me if anything changes. Thanks, Ge.
The intensive care unit is always crowded. Wing is in room 17B, three floors up, and Lan Chen passes by rooms with six beds and drawn curtains, the quiet hissing noise of oxygen like sleeping dragons down the hall. Room 17B is almost at the end of the corridor, and his heart starts thumping wild and steely in his chest at the sight of it. He's nauseous all over again. Get some sleep. The door for 17B is shut, with a narrow slice of window facing the aisle separating four beds, two on each side of the room. It's smaller, and when he peers in, he sees Jian Tong, who has his hands on his sister's shoulders, where she's seated by a bed near the other end of the room. The curtain is drawn. Lan Chen can only see the table at the end of the bed. There's a paper cup knocked on its side. Then, Jiang Tong catches sight of him in the window and shuffles woodenly towards the door.
How is he?
Lan Chen asks as soon as it's open.
Doctor said the first hour is most crucial. They pumped him and took his blood. Now they're analyzing how much got into his bloodstream.
Jiang Tong had never been particularly nice to Lan Chen, but he's trembling so hard that Lan Chen feels a bizarre urge to put a steadying hand on his shoulder. Jiang Yanli had said that Jiang Tong was the one to find him.
But he is better than he was before.
Lan Chen's throat could be all needles. He swallows.
Can I see him?
Jiang Tong opens the door wider.
I should warn you. He doesn't look like he usually does.
Such an ugly pause. There are two other patients in this room. The bed beside Wei Ying's empty. Jiang Yanli stands up when he comes in, and she's dressed like she'd come to the hospital directly from a fancy dinner party. Her hair is still curled, but her lipstick has faded around her lips, and two faint, tire-streaked tear tracks have stained her cheeks. She offers him a quiet smile. Tian Tian, she says, that pet name rolling off her tongue more easily than it does with anyone else in his own family. Thanks for coming. Then she leans over the bed, and before Lan Chen rounds the curtain, he can hear her soft voice. Aying, look who came to visit. You should greet him, don't you think? When his mother went, she'd been so pale and thin that every time Lan Chen visited,
He thought his hands would go right through her body. Even at the end, she insisted on lifting him and Lan Huan into her bed, holding her two boys close and listening to them chatter about what they were learning in school, who won the art contest, who won piano regionals, if they'd visited anywhere fun. She would make them promise to bring her when she got better. His brother would always be the one who said,
"Of course, Mama."
As Lan Chen drew pictures on her palms and wrists with water-based markers. He thought they'd make her look more solid, like she wouldn't simply vaporize into thin air like steamed milk, skin tight like the filmy surface of boiled cream. Jiang Cheng pulls the curtain back slightly, just so Lan Chen can fit himself against the side of the bed opposite Jiang Yanli, and then draws it again. The metal rings scrape overhead. Shunk. A ventilator is taped to his face, tube tunneling deep into his throat. Blue medical adhesive stark against his skin. He's so pale. Paler than Lan Chen has ever seen him, almost blue. Wing is always a little paler coming off the heels of winter, but all color comes in shocks off of him. The tape, the tubes, his hair a black storm pulled back in a messy ponytail away from his face. Red hair tie, the metal clasp catching the light, a bent nail hammered into his skull. Tubes sprout out of him like weeds. If Lan Chen tried to hug him, he'd get an armful of plastic and metal. He's doing better now than he was before. Achang said he was turning gray, and then blue before I got here. Jiang Yanli says, sitting down again. Both of his arms have drips feeding into him. But she runs the back of her index finger back and forth against a free patch on Wayne's wrist. Jiang Cheng sits down heavily on one of the couches at the end of the room. The springs creak. The cushion beside him sags, with a remembered weight and pain left behind by other visitors to the ICU. Lan Chen stands rooted to this spot, unmoving.
"You can touch him," Jiang Yanli prompts. "As long as you don't jostle any tubes. The doctor said some touch is good."
He's been staring at Wing's hands mostly because it was easier to look at them without breaking. More anonymous. They could be anyone's hands, and even that would still be a lie, because Lan Chen would know Wing's hands in the dark with his eyes closed. He's watched them blur at a piano, type at a phone, rest upon Lan Chen's chest, over his heart, losing sleep. Wayne's eyelashes are still. When he's asleep, his eyelashes always quiver, beak, sweeping dreams, keeping his eyes busy. His lips are chapped and gray, the aforementioned blue. From here, Lan Chen can see the network of electrodes snaking down the front of Wayne's loose hospital gown, splayed in a web of frog's feet over his chest. It rises and falls so faintly that Lan Chen has to fight down the urge to rest his palm over Wing's body just to feel it move. "It's moving," Jiang Yanli murmurs. She's noticed.
I had to see too.
Lan Chen lifts his hand and settles it so gently at the crown of Wing's head that he can just barely feel the soft give of his hair. His mouth aches to lean forward and kiss him on the forehead, but he thinks it wouldn't be appropriate in front of Jiang Yanli. Wayne lies as still as ever, without any indication that he even knows there are people touching him, and Lan Chen wants to cry. The question comes up shredded and bloody when Lan Chen opens his mouth.
"How did it happen?"
Jiang Yanli glances in Jiang Cheng's direction without looking all the way. He's shuddered, staring at nothing with his weight unbalanced on the moldy couch.
"Achang found him in the bathroom when he got home," she says. "You know Aying has prescription sleep aids because he has so much trouble sleeping. He always has, since we were little kids."
Lan Chen nods mutely.
"He took 3 months' worth with Baijiu, and then took a time he deserved to force it down,"
she whispers,
words cracking in her mouth. His body threw up some. Not enough. We're just lucky Hatang got home early enough and moved fast. Tears have pulled in her eyes again, but she stays steady, sniffling once as they run down her face again. She's curled her fingers around a band of wrist without needles, running her thumb back and forth against his skin.
Jie-jie, sorry. Jie-jie, so sorry, I didn't know. Jie-jie, sorry. Jie-jie, sorry.
You have to save your level 8's past,
Lanchen says, because it's the only thing he can say without joining Jiang Yanli and weeping.
Your level 8's love you. You still wanted to go to that restaurant on Nanjing Road. We were going to go to the botanical garden again. I'm so sorry. You had double egg yolks. It had to count for something. I wish I could have been there to catch you. Wake up, please. I'll play Nuvoli Bianche for you again. Play anything you want me to play. I'll play for you forever if you wake up. Your level 8's love you. Please don't leave me. I love you. Please don't leave me.
You have to be here to take everyone out for dinner, even if they didn't pass.
Jiang Yanli sniffles, swiping at her cheeks with her hands. She stands, and the leather of her purse squeaks.
I'm sorry, Tian-Tian. We should have gotten you water. I'll go.
No matter, Li Jie. I need to give my brother a call. I'll go. Would you or Jiang Tong like anything?
I'm fine.
She sniffles again, pasting on a smile, then nodding like she's happy with how steady she can sound.
A tongue?
Jiang Tong shakes his head mutely. Lan Chen casts another glance over Wing, then lets his hand fall. The hallway is dim for the evening, and the hospital, who never sleeps, could be breathing. He waits until he's out of the corridor to call his brother.
A Chen?
He's not well, Ge.
What happened?
Lan Chen swallows, eyes hot.
Suicide attempt.
The kettle hiss of static. Then...
A Chen, I'm so sorry. Is he okay now, at least?
I don't know.
Rings Qian Yanli's voice in his temples.
He's still here.
Are you okay? Are you going to stay for longer?
I want to.
That's fine. Shall I take your classes tomorrow? If Shushu asks, I'll tell him what happened. He won't say anything. Are Jiang Yanli and Jiang Cheng here? Let me know if they need anything. I'll go home and come back in the morning with some things for you if you want.
Silence that neither of them have learned how to fill.
Do you plan to stay until he wakes up, Ma Chen?
Yes.
If he doesn't?
Lan Chen shuts his eyes.
I can't afford to think like that, Ge.
Of course, you're right. I'm sorry. Will you be okay by yourself?
I'll be fine. Go home. If you need to find my lesson plans, call me.
I will. Hang in there, Aten. It'll be okay.
And they hang up. The vending machines in Changcheng are outfitted with enough AI that his brother would joke that he doesn't trust them. He can't see where they keep their brains. The cooling mechanism hums to life, shaking the tile beneath his feet, a line of thumping steel hearts frosting the lobby glacial blue. There's water on the top shelf, a line of overpriced Nongfu springs, and he swipes open his WeChat pay code. A gentle chime, and then his payment processes. The middle row is all snacks and crackers, a shiny plastic rainbow of grease laid out at eye level for children. Closest to Lan Chen are two rows of Wonwon snacks, the miniature honey bun variety, and senbei crackers. Wing eats them like they're his meal replacements. Green tea and Wonwon honey buns. When Lan Chen caught him with nothing else for lunch one day, multiple days, he started bringing extra food, then started packing an extra lunch.
Lanchen, you don't have to. You really don't. You went to the trouble again?
For someone who doesn't cook meat regularly, you're really quite good at it.
Wei always talked with his mouth full. No time to chew and swallow.
Chen Chen, you'll have to give me the recipe for this. Where'd you learn to make pork slices and garlic?
You plan on making it?
Lanchen asked, and Wei laughed.
No, I'll just ask Jia to make it.
He said, and his laughter sung like a bell. Lanchen presses the buttons in the paint pad for the honey buns. And the crackers. There's a miniature box of salted dog egg biscuits. He gets those too. And here, where there is no one to watch or listen or care, Lanchen feels tears run down his face. The machine chimes in received again, but it sounds like she's trying to console him. And when he bends down this time to retrieve the snacks from the chute, his body gives, and he sinks to the floor. It is not a picture of dignity. He crosses his legs on the dusty linoleum and sits there and cries. Around his face, his hair hangs in dark velveteen curtains, and he leans forward until he can feel his forehead pressed to the cool plexiglass of the vending machine. The cooling hum vibrates against him, making his teeth chatter in place. The hospital vending machine bears witness to more honest fear and grief than some funerals do. He's quiet, mostly. He's quiet, but he sobs, takes drowning, gulping breaths with a lapful of bottled water and crackling snack bags. Heard throbs behind his face like molten metal, sterling silver and steel red hot as more tears spill down his face. Between his apartment and the hospital, the breathless trip in between, Lanchen hadn't been able to cry. It had congealed in one cold, solid block that he could feel pressing on the backs of his eyes. But now the tears spill out all at once, and he cries like he hasn't in years. At what? He doesn't know. One thing, everything. That Wing was hurting enough that he didn't feel like there was another way out. That he might wake up and be a different person. That he might not wake up at all. But Lanchen didn't know. He knew about the pain. He has it too. They talked to each other about their pain. He didn't know how close to the edge Wei had been. How could he not have known? How do you love a person and not see the ravine behind them? Thankfully, no one comes by. He sits until his tears dry into a sour thrumming in his sinuses. Then he peels himself off the ground with his snacks and water and returns to room 17B. Part of him sinks when he sees that nothing has changed, stupidly hoping that all of this is a vivid, waking nightmare. But Jiang Yanli is still sitting in her chair beside Wing's bed. Jiang Teng is still curled up on the couch, bending all his long limbs in on himself like a dead spider.
You didn't have to, Chan Chan, Jiang Yanli says reproachfully when he hands her a water and sets down the snack bags. Is your brother still here?
I told him to go.
We can bring you back with us when we leave, Jiang Yanli says. Zixuan drove me here. There's space for another.
Jin Zixuan had dropped off Jiang Yanli. Oh God, no wonder she's dressed so nicely. She'd been on a date. She'd come right to the hospital, Frisia perfume a sharp, rogue edge in the stale antiseptic.
I'll stay with him for a while, if that's okay.
Are you sure? You have students to teach, don't you?
We just had a round of exams, so not as many as usual.
Lanchen pulls up another chair, plastic rattling across the tile.
My brother will take them on, at least for tomorrow.
At the conservatory?
No, not those. External students training to enter the conservatory.
Oh,
You teach a wide range, then. She says, and passes a bottle of water to her brother. He takes it gently, but leaves it beside him on the couch. It rolls into the crevice between the two cushions.
I'll stay a little longer. Then Achang and I will go home for a bit. We've told our parents they're going to come up by train tomorrow. We're going to meet them and come back.
Lin Chen is of the opinion that it is not a good idea to let Yu Zuyuan visit Wei Ying the way he is now. But he nods. His elbows rest on the side rails of the hospital bed, and both his hands are curled around a free square of Wei Ying's right arm. He has a particularly thick, imposing tube taped to his hand on this side. Lin Chen wants to gather him, his little city of tubes and subway tracks, into his arms. Wonders foolishly if Wei Ying would wake up faster and more whole that way. The seconds pass in static. The minutes, then the hours, slip by in silence. To be so close to Wei Ying for so long and not hear his voice for any of it is unfamiliar and scary. Even when he's not talking, music leaves him in firework bursts. In the middle of something, anything, a melody for a composition will fall into his head, and he'll hum it until he can reach paper. He'll play it when he can reach a piano. Lin Chen will murmur,
"I don't think I've ever heard that one."
And Wei Ying will chuckle and say,
"I thought of it just now."
His voice flattened in the soundproofing of a conservatory practice room when Lin Chen asked, once,
"What's it called?"
Lin Chen asked.
And Wei Ying said, "I don't know. The thing it was inspired by, I guess."
"Which was?"
"Watching my best friend pick at a hangnail," he said, and Lin Chen rolled his eyes and sucked on the raw, stinging strip of skin just below his fingernail. "What? You don't like your hangnail song?"
"I do. I love it because you wrote it for me,"
Lin Chen didn't say, and now hates himself for it. Lin Chen has his gaze trained on Wei Ying so long that he only notices Zhen Yanli starting to fall asleep when Jiang Tang appears behind her, his hands on her shoulders jolting her out of her doze.
"Jie, let's go home. Zhishuan's on his way."
He looks to Lin Chen, like he just remembered he was there.
"He can bring you back. Are you sure you want to stay?" "I'll stay and let you know right away if anything changes."
Jiang Yanli's eyes are shiny and scared as she stands, still clutching gently at Wei Ying's arm. "Jie Jie will come back soon, okay?" she says. "Don't go anywhere. Zhang Tong and I will come back soon. Be nice to Lin Chen. It's very late for him."
"Let's go wait for Zhishuan downstairs, Jie."
"Okay. Okay. We need to clean the house before Baba and Mama come tomorrow. How bad is it, Zhang Tong?" Lin Chen closes his eyes and doesn't listen. Around him, the machines click on, these cold metal bodies keeping Wei Ying warm.
"Xianxiang, excuse me, Xianxiang."
Lin Chen wakes up and, for a few dizzy seconds, has no recollection of what had happened, where he is, why he's waking with a tight cramp like a coiled spring in his neck. A sting flares sharply up the line of his spine when he sits up, and a gray shadow falls into his eyes to block out the light from the window. It's light out. He'd overslept. Then his vision focuses. The beeping filters back into his brain, and he remembers where he is. His heart starts beating in his throat when he looks down at Wei Ying, who hasn't budged a muscle since Lin Chen had fallen asleep last night. He runs his hand across his face, feeling sleep-smeared and unpresentable. A mark of corrugated tube plastic has been stamped into his cheekbone in red welts.
"Xianxiang, we have to run some tests on the patient. Are you his family?"
The nurse has a kind face, older, with a tight perm and big, owlish glasses.
"I... No, I'm not. He's my friend.
Then I'm sorry. We'll have to ask you to leave.
Lenchen stands up, swaying. He curls his fingers around the bed rail to steady himself. The nurse has busied herself readying Weying's machine, taking down notes onto her clipboard. Tiny numbers march in an unfeeling army across these screens, and Lenchen's skin flushes hot the way it does when he's gone too long without sleep, prickly sweat starting at the back of his neck. And that's what he blames it on, the sleep deprivation, when he leans down by Weying's face, sweeps a stray lock of hair from his forehead, and presses his lips to his skin. The nurse says nothing. She's not even looking.
I'll come back later,
Lenchen murmurs. Weying is still pale, but at least in a human-like way this morning. Maybe it's wishful thinking or a trick of the light.
I promise I'll be back later. Your sister, your family,
he says, because somehow Jiang Yanli stands out from the rest of them.
They'll come visit you soon.
Xian Sheng, your phone!
The nurse calls after him as he gets up to leave. She picks it up from where it's cocooned itself into Weying's blankets. It lights up when she lifts it, and the picture of Weying blinks back into existence. The battery is so low that it's a single hair of a pixel in the power bank icon.
Don't lose it.
Thank you, he says.
Behind her, Jiang Cheng's water bottle is still wedged between the couch cushions. Lenchen goes downstairs, out of the lobby without saying anything, and calls a DD. The driver offers him a cigarette.
Because you look like you need one, young man.
He declines. Halfway home, his phone runs out of battery. When he lifts it, he gets no picture of Weying at all. Lenchen met Weying when they were 18, and suddenly, music meant something. Not that it didn't before, but it had always meant discipline, pride, perseverance, mark of good morals, mark of a good student, mark of a filial son, and then a filial nephew. It had meant Hanan scales for warm-ups and tourney measures for technique. And when his eyes crossed from the sonatines, his treat was to work on something worth showing, as in, something that would get him into a good music school. If he was going to do it, then he better be the best. Or else, why did you waste my time and money for? So he got into the Shanghai Conservatory of Music. He didn't even know if he was proud of it, of himself, because it was still only enough.
Because you aren't the material to get into the Beijing Conservatory, like Lang Lang, but I guess I didn't expect you to be,
said his uncle, and Lenchen had put his head down and said nothing. And then, Wei had walked into his life, or rather, Lenchen had walked into his. He'd been looking for a practice room, only to pick one already occupied by Weying, bent over a wrinkled book of sheet music with a frown wide enough to split his face. The sound of the door opening made him look up, gold bobby pin flashing where it held his hair out of his eyes.
Oh, said Lenchen, balking. I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
No worries, I'm almost done for today anyway. I'm getting sick of looking at this. You want the piano, right?
Lenchen nodded. He felt, very suddenly, aware of every cell in his body, like they'd all woken up at once. His insides squirmed in a good way, if there was one.
Your name is Lenchen, right? Weying asked. I've seen you in my classes. I'm Weying. Usually I just practice on the uprights, but everyone always rants and raves about the baby grand, so I thought I'd be a little selfish today and hog one.
Lenchen shifted his music books from one arm to the other. He needed to do something with his hands.
What were you practicing?
Want me to play for you?
He stepped closer, letting his eyes fall to the keys so he wouldn't have to keep looking at Weying. His cheeks felt hot and stupid, and he nodded again.
Sure.
So Weying had put his hands to the keys,
made a grand show of readying himself, and played 10 seconds of chopsticks completely seriously, even using his damper pedal. Lan Chen stared when he finished. Mui laughed at the expression on his face, packing up his music books into his backpack.
Don't look at me like that, Lan Chen. Wow! I wouldn't keep you here for 6 minutes because I like the sound of my own playing. Practice hard, study well, ascend every day.
And he waved as he glided, cheerful as a sailboat, out the door. And so, that day, Lan Chen began to consider that music was a funny thing, a fun thing, a silly secret to be kept and shared between two people. His apartment is hollow and echoey when he returns, like the inside of himself. Where his lesson plans are usually stacked beside the piano is vacant. He's glad, at least, that his brother had brought the right material. On the counter is a note from Lan Huan.
A turn. I know you probably have no appetite, but try to eat something before going back to the hospital.
It says. He'd written it on Lan Chen's post-it notes, blue with little white clouds drifting across the paper. Wei had bought them for him from some hole in the wall that sold everything and anything. Batteries, cigarettes, high chews, ice cream, cramped and unair-conditioned. Maybe this is what it's like to lose someone, or have to confront a reality where you might lose them. You see them in everything. Lan Chen checks under the mosquito netting. Lan Huan had left him rice and soy-braised kaofu. And even through his dry, red haze of sleep deprivation, he feels his stomach rumble. For a total of 10 seconds, the hot spray of the shower makes him feel better, and Jiang Yinli's voice turns the stream of water into needles.
Lai Cheng found him in the bathroom when he got home.
Goose flesh erupts down Lan Chen's arms as he pictures it.
You know Ai Ying has prescription sleep aids because he has so much trouble sleeping. He always has, since we were little kids.
Jiang Cheng is not someone who inspires much sympathy, least of all from Lan Chen. But the thought of walking into a bathroom and seeing... He stares at the dark drain towards which all the water rushes. After he gets out of the shower, wet hair feathering as it dries, he considers getting some shut-eye on the couch before going back to the hospital, but he can't. Lan Chen looks at his phone and there's still nothing, a piece of cold, silent metal, and his heart squirms like a sick kitten in his chest. Jiang Yinli should be back in the hospital now, probably with her parents in tow. Lan Chen trusts that Jiang Fengmian would be worried, maybe even scared, but he knows Yu Ziyuan. Lan Chen stands at the counter, floor moving like water under his feet, and eats his food cold. Goes through the motions of changing into something presentable to go out in, something powder blue that feels good on his skin, and dries his hair before pinning it back in a loose half-up ponytail at the back of his head. He's back out of the door just past noon. On the way to the subway station, Lan Chen passes by an old woman selling wares out of the back of her pulley cart. Sparkling beaded animals. Bagua bracelets like caramel in the noon sun. A basket full of magnolia mounted on little pins. So aromatic that a cloud of sweet pungence hangs around her. And when she watches Lan Chen pause, her aged, leathery face splits in a smile.
Young man, would you like something?
Popo, how much for the magnolia pins?
10 renminbi.
I'll have one.
Just one?
One is enough. Thank you.
She holds up her little scanner with shaking hands, frowning when his payment doesn't read. And a child, no older than 10, scampers out of the convenience store outside which she sits and writes the screen for her again. He's wearing a holy t-shirt and mismatched white and red plastic slippers with abominations of Mickey and Minnie Mouse on the straps.
Here, Gaga,
he says, holding up the scanner again. And Lan Chen finds it in himself to smile as his payment goes through.
Go slowly,
Thank you.
He doesn't go slowly, but it feels like he does. Like he's running in a dream, paddling through a thick river of hot soup, and drowning. When he steps onto the subway, he doesn't remember to even check that it's the right one before it starts moving. Sandwiched between a girl whose roots have grown back into her platinum bleached hair, and a harried businessman shouting into his cell phone. His voice kicks at Lan Chen's back. Thunk, thunk. Child's feet against the dizzy airplane seat of his skull. Like his head is disconnected from his body, floating somewhere. Wei had thrust one of these on him once. The pedals had been bruised and sweaty, as if he'd been running with them crunched in his fist like a pair of scissors.
Lan Chen,
he said when he'd caught him just outside the exam hall.
Here, for luck.
For my exam?
For your exam, for everything. Keep it in your pocket. I know you're perfect at everything you do, but who knows when you'll need a little bit of luck, right?
Wei had curled his fingers around it and pushed Lan Chen's hand to his chest.
It's for me. That's how you know it's lucky.
The magnolia seat in Lan Chen's palm, smooth slices of green-stemmed soap, and he curls his fingers around them again. The hospital is significantly less beautiful in the daytime, a slab of glass and stone imposing against the white noise pollution of the city. People filter in and out of the entrance. Families, children, older people helped only by their equally old relatives. And Lan Chen pauses to hold out his hand and lead them down the stairway to the street. One old man grasps his wrist.
Young man, thank you,
he says, mottled skin dark against Lan Chen's arm.
Young people won't even help us now. No trouble.
He's led in by a chipper young woman this time, who seems to have trouble taking in his face all at once when she looks up. In other circumstances, Lan Chen would have to confront the mortifying ordeal of being perceived as handsome, but he's running on several hours of cramped sleep and cold food, so he simply waits in silence as she processes his pass. She nods at his magnolia pin.
Visiting your girlfriend? She asks.
And out of Lan Chen's mouth comes,
yes.
I hope she's okay,
she says, like it's supposed to be a question. Says Lan Chen, already untangling himself from her gaze and heading for the third floor. This time, he does not have the privilege of Jiang Yanlin's fond, fearful tears or Jiang Cheng's shaken silence. Now that it's daytime, the doors of several wards are open, visitors trotting in and out like bees, nurses hurrying back and forth in blue scrubs. Lan Chen dodges a tearful child being carried away by their grandparents, faces drawn, and he forces himself not to look into the room that they came out of. Lan Chen can hear Yu Zuyuan before he sees her.
If he wants to die, that's his choice. Why do we have to waste this time and money keeping him alive if that's not even what he wants? Ma!
Jiang Cheng.
That's enough!
Lan Chen slows to a stop outside of room 17B, the nausea that he'd wailed away in the shower building inside him again.
Am I wrong?
A scoff out of Yu Zuyuan's mouth, no matter how quiet, is always pinching. Not the affectionate kind either, fingers nipping a cheek. Always hard, like she was trying to twist off a piece of flesh.
Ali, stop crying for him. It's not your job to. Stop crying, you look so ugly.
If I don't cry for him, who will?
Jiang Yanli says, voice smeared around her tears.
I don't see you doing it.
Jie Jie,
says Jiang Cheng, pleading.
Stop talking.
Let her talk, says Yu Zuyuan. I, for one, did not raise a daughter to cry for someone so selfish.
The hallway turns red around the fringes of Lan Chen's periphery, and he steps into the doorway. Jiang Yanli sees him and stands up immediately, and Jiang Cheng, if Lan Chen can believe it, looks relieved. He immediately hooks his arm in his sister's and puts the other around Yu Zuyuan's shoulders.
Let's go, he says, clipped. Lan Chen said he would visit.
I want to talk about the cost of this stay,
Yu Zuyuan says, even as he corrals her towards the door.
I won't be paying for it.
I don't need you to. I will if I have to. It doesn't matter if that makes your stomach turn.
Lan Chen thinks viciously, but he arranges his face into one of respectful calm as they pass him. Jiang Yanli reaches for his arm, says,
Tian Tian,
in a weak voice, and it's all she can manage before Jiang Tong leads her away. Jiang Fengmian brings up the rear, and he fixes Lan Chen with a solemn gaze, nodding once before clasping a large cigarette smoky hand on his shoulder and squeezing.
Sorry to trouble you, he says. Not a trouble, says Lan Chen.
Wei Ying is unchanged. Someone has smoothed his hair down, probably Jiang Yanli, but still he is a network of tubes, still a ventilator buzzes deep in his mouth. Lan Chen sits down in the chair that Jiang Yanli had just vacated, the cushion uncomfortably warm under him. He's sitting in a spot that he probably doesn't belong in. Across the aisle, one of the patient's curtains has been drawn back. A woman with her head wrapped in bandages. She doesn't have any visitors. Lan Chen reaches into his pocket for the flowers and sees that Jiang Yanli had texted him a few minutes ago. The text banner stretching over the screen just to cover the bottom of Wei Ying's face.
Jiang Yanli. I'm sorry for earlier, Tian Tian. Would it be better or worse if I said I knew this would happen? Sorry. I wanted to update you, but didn't get a chance. Doctors have said that he has stable progress. We should consider ourselves lucky.
A thin bruise runs along the veins of Lan Chen's magnolias, and he places them on the fold-out table at the end of Wing's bed. The snack bags are still there. Most of them, anyway. The salted egg crackers are gone.
Lan Chen.
Thank you, Li Jie. No worries. Hope you are okay. And your brother, please get some rest if you can.
Jiang Yanli. I understand. You look very tired too, Tian Tian. We'll come back tonight, and you can get some sleep. Your brother told us that you stayed the night here. You've suffered. Lan Chen.
It's okay. For Wei Ying, it's not suffering.
Jiang Yanli. You should talk to him. Doctor said he might be able to hear us and come around more quickly. I hope he didn't hear any of that just now. Sad emoji. Lan Chen.
I will.
He puts his phone down. If Lan Chen had a choice, he would find a piano to play for Wei Ying. It's easier for him to sit down and play Nuvole Bianche and see Wei Ying's smile appear on his face even when he was feeling quiet or mean or empty. Some days, he wouldn't reach a smile, but he'd turn his head to the sound of the music, never entirely looking at Lan Chen, but he knew Wei Ying was listening. The next best thing is his phone. But there are so many tubes and so much tape crisscrossing Wei Ying's face that Lan Chen won't try to put anything in his ears. So he sits there, finding an empty strip of skin on Wei Ying's arm to stroke, and opens his mouth, closes it, opens it again.
Once you told me, he says, throat cottony, that magnolias on a pen would be lucky because they were from you. For my exam, for anything. It was 7 years ago. I was testing for a practical exam, and you ran from the subway station just to give it to me. Remember?
Clicking and beeping.
I hadn't thought about it for a while. I don't think I told you. I kept those magnolias. I forgot about them first, let them in my pocket and found them withering, my sweater smelling of luck. I saw them outside my apartment today, and I brought some, because...
His insides tug hot and sharp as he thinks about it.
I still need you here.
Not because of luck. Because of love. I should have told you that earlier. I should have told you years ago. I don't know if it would have changed anything. Please, let it be enough. Wei Ying doesn't look like he's sleeping. Just a waxy thing being kept alive. Like the cloudy puddle of candle melt after its flame has been put out. Hardening in the cold. Lan Chen hadn't meant to fall asleep again. And he doesn't. Not all the way. He props his head on his fist, elbow notched against the raised frame of Wayne's mattress, and strange images flash in and out behind his eyes, like the lock screen of his phone, blinking every time it darkens. Yu Zuyan's poison. His brother coming home with his back turned to Lan Chen, and turning around and having his uncle's face instead. Wayne, Wayne, always Wayne. Bright and leaping from the backs of his eyelids like he doesn't belong in the phosphine dark. He doesn't. In some instances, he's lying upside down on his own bed, head hanging off the end of his mattress, and blood rushing to his face with a bag of chips. Other times, he's playing the piano, something soft and gentle, turning discordant and monstrous. Sometimes, he's just talking, and Lan Chen can't hear him at all, his mouth opening and closing without words. He jolts awake when his elbow slips, and Lan Chen rights himself in his seat. The sun has moved into the window, a prickly square of light inching across his shoe and baking his foot. He shifts, and Wayne's eyes are open. Lan Chen's heart shoots into his throat, splatters against the roof of his mouth. He rises from his seat.
Wei Ying?
He leans over him in bed.
Wei Ying, can you hear me?
Wei Ying follows Lan Chen's movements just ever so slightly, eyelids rippling as if they hadn't planned on being open again. He stares up into Lan Chen's face, unmoving save for his slitted eyes. And Lan Chen runs his hand down Wei Ying's arm until he can fit it into the clammy curve of Wei Ying's palm. He squeezes two of his fingers gently.
I'm going to get a doctor.
Wayne doesn't squeeze back. He just stares, as if Lan Chen isn't even there. End of chapter 1.